This
is number 9. Isn't it? 9?
Yes. This was taken out in the middle of the Grand Round Valley on my grandfather and grandmother's place. And I have no idea what time of there, what year it was, other than there is a small boy there. And that's possibly my dad. And he was born in 1896.
Mm-hmm. Maybe right around 1900 then.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be around then. And this is the way that they bound the grain, and these family was shocking it, putting it into shocks so that it would finish drying out and be ready for the threshing machine.
And exactly what did that machine that's in that picture do?
It cut it and wrapped a twine around it, or a binder twine, they called it, so that it would hold it in a big sheath.
And it was, did that simply operate from the wheels turning, or did it have some other source of power?
Just from the wheels turning.
Mm-hmm. They had gears, perhaps, that would would cause the binding to go around the shocks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you don't have any idea what they were cutting there? Was it hay?
Probably wheat.
Wheat?
Wheat or oats,
And did you say that after it was put in those shocks, it would stand upright for a while until it dried?
Until it dried, and then he'd come out with team and wagons and pitch it onto the wagons and take it to the thrashing machine.
Would it stand out for several days or a couple of weeks?
A few days probably, wouldn't you say?
It would depend more on the
weather.
Climate, weather-wise, and also when the thrashing machine can get
to
it. Places. But so I'd say if there had been rain, naturally it had to set longer.
And Elma, what did you say you did in relation to that machine?
I was not any place around.
You weren't involved in the shocking or the piling?
No, this was a little before my time.
Well, I thought maybe there were still machines operating similar to that. When you were...
I didn't.
No.
My time came in about probably 20, 22 years later.
Okay. All right, let's go on to number 1.
Go on number 1.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 1. In... Yeah, number 1 identifies my family in the about 1917. In 1917, my brother to the left, myself and my old kitty Tommy, and my mother and I, and. The house, as you can see, is already built, but not very long. In fact, there were some things that continued to be done, but basically we're sitting there getting our pictures.
Was that the first house you lived in?
That's the first and only house that I lived in for the first few years of my life.
And exactly where is it?
This is approximately 4.5 miles north of Somerville, and more directly about 1 3/4 miles north of the Dry Creek School, where both my brother and I went part of our school. Virgil, my brother, is a little over 6 years older than I am, so he had a great deal to do with my childhood.
Did your father have something to do with building the house?
Somewhat. I should say he had a lot to do with it. He had a carpenter that did the guidance, helped him know, helped him to build. A fellow by the name of Bill German. My memory serves me very well here. Jim German was a man older than my mother and dad, father. And he was cross-eyed. Very interesting man. And he enjoyed his work. It was very obvious that he enjoyed his work and he was good at it. And those days when they'd work from sun up till sundown and sometimes much longer than that. When,
in addition to building houses, did he build barns and outhouses and stables and that sort of thing?
I'm quite sure he did. My memory of him was when I was quite young, and I don't know what happened to him in his later life, but yeah.
How many rooms did this house have?
It had one. It had a front room, dining room, and a kitchen, and two bedrooms, and then a little utility room. And then we had a room that took care of the, we call it the separator, separating the cream from the milk. And then this led off down into a little basement, which was on the north side of the house. I don't think we have a picture of that, but that was kind of like some people would call it a root house.
It didn't have a toilet or running water?
We had running water inside. As you recall, seeing the spring, which is at the new house, there was much more than, I'm sure it was, I say, at least twice as much water flowing from that spring. It seemed like quite a bit more than that.
So exactly how did the water get from the spring inside the house?
There is something that's called a hydraulic ram. For lack of a, I don't know how to better describe it, but yeah, we had a dam below the spring that was coming out of the ground, and this dam would have a stream of water flowing over it, over the dam, and we had a pipe running from this dam a few feet away with a certain amount of fall. And the distance of this fall would go into this ram, as we call it. And this ram, when the water would go through, you just hear it go pump, 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 pump. And it was, all has to do with hydraulics. Please understand, I don't know much about hydraulics.
But what do you suppose operated the hydraulic part? Just the pressure of the water?
Yes, the distance, the distance of the fall to where it goes into this ram, and then this ram would pump the water up the hill to a large wooden tank that was above our house, above in a shed close to our house, and water tank, the water would then flow down into our kitchen, and we had a faucet there to get our water.
Well, anything more than a trickle?
No, it was a decent.
A spurt?
Not a spurt. No, no, it'd be more
a
like
steady flow.
More like a steady flow. Yes. It's interesting you bring this up because. Forget about it.
Yes. So that supplied drinking water and bathing and washing water.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, it did.
But toilet facilities were outside.
The toilet, yes, the toilet facilities were outside. Mm-hmm. And we had just a toilet where we would move it from time to time. Mm-hmm. It was with horses.
Did this house have electricity at the beginning?
No.
What?
It never did happen.
Never did. When I left the farm, finally, and when I was 17, let's see up here. It was in 1919 when I finally moved from the farm to go on to college, there was still no electricity. Mm-hmm.
And lighting was what, kerosene?
Kerosene, and yes, basically kerosene.
Mm-hmm. Were these lamps that you carried around, or were some of them hung from above or attached to the wall in some way?
Well, in our home, we had kerosene lamps and kerosene.
That you'd carry around?
Not lamps, no. We call them lanterns with a handle on them. The lamps set on tables and also on the walls with a bracket to hold them.
Okay. I imagine they smelled a lot, didn't they, the kerosene lamps?
I don't think we were much very well. Mm.
I was always aware of kerosene. Several people's houses that I visited had kerosene heaters, and I always thought that,
did you really
stink?
Also, I think they came into being, well, at least we had a lamp that was gasoline, and lanterns that were gasoline.
Now, number two is an enlargement of this group in front of the house.
Yes.
It's your mother.
Yes.
And your oldest brother, Virgil, is on their left or the right?
He's on the left.
On the left.
Behind me.
And you're on the right?
No, that's my... Oh, I'm down below. I'm the little guy in the white shirt.
Uh-huh.
And this is my dad.
Oh, I see. I see. I thought you said something earlier about your... Oh, your cat here.
Yeah, that's old Tommy.
Old Tommy. Through your childhood, is he with you?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, a little story that would be interesting, because in order for Virgil to go to high school, we moved to Embler, and we had a home out there in the apple orchards where my mother and dad worked with the apples. And we took our kitty Tommy with us. Now that was 7 miles from our farm. And one day he disappeared. Shortly after we got there, I can't recall, maybe a week or so. And of course, we felt that he got killed or something, and he turned up back at home. You've heard of these all, I'm sure.
Yes.
Now remember, he traveled from Embler. How he traveled, we don't know, but he had to cross a creek two or three times to get home. When he got home, his pads on his paws were just raw. Mother, I remember, bathed him with salt water.
You suspected that's where he'd gone, so you went out to find him? Is that it?
Well, the people that were renting our farm us know that the cat had come home.
Uh-huh.
So we took him back to Embler again, but he only lived a few days. Because, you see, Virgil was in high school, and he was a little kitty about the time I was born, so He was 12 or something. Mm-hmm. That's pretty rough on the old kid.
Maybe he died of a broken heart rather than a bloody paws.
It's just too much for him.
Yes, yes. I sympathize because I like cats too. Now I see a little boy in a dress here with a hat on, number 3.
How do you know it's a boy?
I'm guessing. There's no other way to tell.
That's right. That was me. My mother dressed me, and I guess she dressed my brother when he was young in dresses because she made those out of flour sacks.
Now, is that what you wore all the time or just on Sundays?
I'm sure I wore it all the time.
Little boys wearing dresses, that somehow doesn't, it seems though it would work very well. Getting it caught in things all the time?
It seems to me that my younger years, why, there were several things.
Well, what did you wear under the dress?
Diapers, I suspect.
I think you're a little too old for diapers in that picture.
Do you really?
Yes.
I don't know.
Maybe you just wore a pair of blue jeans.
Well, I never did wear blue jeans until I got it 8 or 9 years old. My mother built all my clothes that I ever wore there earlier.
She built that dress too, probably?
Oh, right. Absolutely, absolutely.
Is that made out of a flour sack, do you think?
I know it was made out of a flour sack.
And that's like a knitted...
But I mean, I was told that.
So. Yeah. Knitted cap you had on there?
Yes, it is. Yes, mm-hmm. It is.
And apparently some kind of a belt. Or is that just your arms?
Those are my arms.
Oh, yes. It's just a loose, straight dress.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. You see, I'm walking, so I must have been 2 years old.
Uh-huh. But at least.
So that was the way my life began up until then.
Uh-huh. And apparently this was on the porch of this house. It looks like kind of a beam there.
This is on, we'll call this the front porch, can I?
Mm-hmm.
And out, when we're looking from here, we call that a barn lot. And the house was fenced away from where animals such as horses and cattle would be. They would be in the barn lot. And if we had sheep, they
this
would
is
be
picture
in the barn
number
lot.
One.
They would never be around in the mm-hmm. house here. The only thing you get in the house, I mean get in this part of the house with a cat and our dogs, they would never be allowed in the house. The dogs, the cats never came in the house. They were always outside.
So, by the way, did this front door enter into a hallway that went all the way through to the back?
You walk through this door into the front room, and there was no hallway. You just off to the right was a door to the front bedroom where my mother and dad slept. Then there was another door that we walked through into the dining room, and to the right of it was the door that walked into the bedroom that my brother and I slept in. And then that was the dining room, and then the dining room walked into the kitchen. But in this dining room, there's another door that walked into a sort of a utility room.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, but you are seeing me in this picture, and back in this barn lot, there was a walkway that would walk from the barn lot into this back porch.
Mm-hmm.
This box that you see right there, that was a wood box. And as we kids grew older, we would fill this wood box with wood, and inside the house, they could take the wood out to put into the kitchen stove and mm-hmm. the front room stoves. Mm-hmm. Those were the two stoves mm-hmm. in our house. One was a cooking stove in the kitchen and a heating stove in the front room.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the only two heaters.
Okay. Now number 4 shows a little boy, some chickens, and a grown woman.
That's right. That is me and Tommy, old Tommy Kitty. And my mother, she's always very proud of her her chickens. Those were Rhode Island red chickens. And we raised enough eggs to buy things at the store and trade the eggs in for some of the expense there.
How many of those eggs do you think you ate?
I'm sorry?
How many of those eggs do you think you ate?
An awful lot.
Hundreds?
In a period of time, I would say no question about it.
Uh-huh.
I'd say that my mother, of course, did not have a lot of facilities for a lot of cooking. And I'm talking about pots and pans and all that. She just had the basics. And she was so busy working out around different farm requirements mm-hmm. that a woman has to do in those mm-hmm. days, because my dad was often out working for other people. By working with other people, he would get enough to pay for different things that we needed around the farm there. Mm-hmm. And so when he did that, her duties would be to milk the cows, separate the milk from the cream, and make sure that all of the farm animals were fed. My brother and I were too young to do those things.
What did she feed these chickens?
Oh, different types of wheat, like wheat, oats.
That you had raised on your farm?
Yes, 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 yes.
Did you ever see her kill one?
Chicken?
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many times.
How did she do it?
I cut them off her hands.
Well, did she have an axe and
yes.
put the chicken on a stump and
yep.
whack it?
Right, that's, mm-hmm. that's the way it happened.
And then did you see the chicken run around for a while without a head? Blood spurting out?
Yes.
And
yes.
So did I. I remember that.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
I wrung their neck.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then after she'd killed it, what did she do?
She dressed it out.
Well, you have to...
Get it down in scalding water and scald it. And
so you can pull pluck the feathers out.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Did you watch her pluck the feathers, or maybe you helped
and
pluck them?
Yes, we often helped mm-hmm. on that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then she'd take out the innards?
Yes.
Did you eat those too?
Oh, the gizzard and uh-huh. the liver.
Yes.
And the heart.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She'd boil those separately, I suppose.
I think so. You know,
did she boil the chicken or roast it?
All of the above. Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes cut it up and
fry
it.
Yes, yes.
How often do you think you had chicken? To eat, I mean.
Probably once a week.
Huh.
Probably once a week. Mm-hmm. Perhaps more. But yes, that was mm-hmm. quite a steady diet because one of the staples.
Yeah. Is this the same barn that we see in picture number one?
This is the barn, and this is the, this is isn't that funny from that picture? I have to stop and what'd you say you mean?
Is this the barn?
No. This is what we call the granary.
In picture number one.
In picture number one, this is a granary. Uh-huh. And to the left of the granary, which we can... Help you. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. See this building over to the right?
Just, yes.
That's the granary.
Uh-huh.
And this is the chicken house.
Oh, yes.
This is the chicken house where the chickens would roost and then we'd feed them outside.
And this is the side of it in picture number four.
This is the barn. This is the horse. This is the cattle side.
It looks bigger than a chicken house to me.
Yeah, this is the barn. And this is this part of this barn. There's a door here. And we drive the cattle, the milk cows, into this side,
mm-hmm.
There were stanchions that the cows would fit into to milk. And then there's more of this barn on the other side, just like this, where the horses go in. And in the middle of this big barn, or big barn, big to us, was the hay mow.
I suspect that we would call those chickens free range.
I've never heard that term before.
Well, that's the term that's being used now.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be better, tastier, if they're allowed to roam around rather than sit in a house all day long, completely bored.
Exactly.
Yes.
And there was
so, high-class chickens, free range. Very good.
And also,
they're sure a lot better flavored than the ones.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure.
Also, something before we pass it up. Chickens, being around the buildings, there were predators that, like hawks and weasels, and occasionally even a mink that would destroy chickens, and having them around the home, they had quite a degree of protection. However, it was not unusual to have to kill a hawk or a owl or conceivably a coyote.
I suppose there were my mother at least two or three roosters, so all the eggs were fertilized.
Yes, certain times of the year. Certain times of the year, they were more preferable not to be fertilized when you sold them to, say, a grocery store.
Yes.
But yes, in the spring of the year, where they hatched the little ones, why, the rooster would be there.
By the way, do you remember whether most of those eggs were brown-shelled?
The Groot Island Reds were brown-shelled, yes. I don't recall us ever having white eggs.
Yeah.
We later had larger chickens called Buff Orpingtons, but they were different kinds as of you older we found.
Did your mother replenish the flock of chickens simply through the eggs that hatched, or did she buy chicks each spring?
I don't recall her ever buying chicks. Now, this could have been, and I just don't remember it, but we might trade with other people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, remember that when we moved to Somerville the first year for my brother to go to school, and I went to the fourth grade there in Somerville, then we went to Embler, as I mentioned before, on my fifth grade of grade school, and my brother went to high school too. Then we returned to the farm, so we had to replace the chickens because they had been taken over by whoever was running the farm, and they kept them. So I can remember now that after the early years when we had the Rhode Island Red chickens, my mother was attracted to these what was called Buff Orpingtons, and they were a larger chicken, produced a lot more meat, and they also produced good eggs too. Yes.
All right, let's switch over to Imler. You're on the baseball team in picture number 5.
I was not all that good a player. I did play. Imler had a real good team. Every year they turned out a good team, and several reasons. One reason was that we didn't play football in the period of my time. The period of my brother's time, 6 years older, they did have a football team. And they quit that because of, I guess, expenses. So what helped make us a good team is, I guess, we were one of the only teams in this part of the valley that didn't have a football team. So we practiced in the fall. And
practiced baseball?
Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And,
gave you a head start.
Number two is we seemed to get good coaches for the team. And this man, Mr. James King, this picture, quite a remarkable man. He did a good job as principal of the high school there. And from there he went on to, I believe it was Le Grand. And I had the great honor of looking him up when I was later.
Okay.
So I looked him up down in Lebanon, Oregon, where he was head of the educational department for that's quite a large school. So I guess that's about all.
What position did you play on the team?
Oh, I was in center field.
Mm-hmm.
I was small, very small. I probably weigh 115 pounds, about the height that I am now, 5'6". But I was quite fast. And in that I was small, and this coach had such a way of getting the very best out of people, in that I was small, and I could run. When I would get up to bat, he taught me to hunch over. And
like this?
Yes. And crowd the inside of the plate. So it made it hard for a pitcher to pitch to me. And we wore padding, and he...
What did they say? Get up off your knees?
Didn't know. It might be. But anyway, by doing that, I got a lot of walks. Uh-huh. I was not really afraid of getting hit. And either they'd have to pitch and couldn't get it across, and, you know. And I learned to be a reasonably good bunter. And this coach taught us a lot about money.
Did you hit any home runs?
No.
Never?
The first year that I really made the team, I was just a sub. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I wasn't all that good a player to begin with. But second always was that I had a lot of work to do at home, you know, when I was living on the farm. And to play ball and then walk home, it was a long old thing to have happen.
Did this coach have you do any kinds of exercises other than playing baseball itself?
Oh, not really, no.
No calisthenics or push-ups?
No, we had enough of that at home, doing chores and getting back and forth to school.
Uh-huh.
No, we were.
Your muscles were pretty well developed at that time?
Sure were.
Mm-hmm. Even though you were skinny?
Yes. Just a little short anecdote on this. We never did have a track team of any sort, except we did try, but nobody ever did much. And so when I was a senior in junior in high school, a boy in the team, I don't know if he's in the picture or not, by the name of Dwight Conklin, took first place in the mile for Eastern Oregon championship, first place. So the next year, I was a senior, and Dwight was also a senior. And Mr. King, it was another teacher who was teaching. And he said, "Now, whatever you do, Sanderson, you follow Dwight Conklin. Don't deviate that. You follow Dwight Conklin." So I did. I followed him. I started out real good. Did pretty good for probably the first half mile. And then another kid passed us. I thought, that's all right. Now Dwight knows what he's doing. So then another guy passed us. And then when the fourth man passed us, I thought, I'll just follow that guy. So I took fifth place. I don't know what could have happened if I could have took out after the first one. I think I probably could have ended second place because I was running a mile and three quarters every morning to go to school and a mile and three quarters to get home.
Sure, good practice.
I had lots of...
You probably should have put more energy into track than to baseball.
I don't know.
Yeah. You notice I enlarged the picture of you from here.
Yeah.
Were you about a sophomore, do you think?
At that one?
Yeah.
I think so.
Number six.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Either a freshman or a sophomore, but...
You look fairly grim. I guess you were just serious about it, having your picture taken.
I want to be important.
Now, number seven is the Boys Glee Club, I think you said.
Correct. Yes.
Well, tell me one or two stories about being in that, the kinds of songs you sang, and where you performed.
They were just at the high school there, and we just whatever we happened to be at a function at the high school.
Do you remember singing songs like, "Give me some men who are stout-hearted men"? No?
Actually, I don't.
That's by Sigmund Romberg. It might be a little later than this time, but I think it's about the same period.
I don't really remember.
Boys Glee Clubs used to sing that one a lot.
So help me, I just haven't much to tell you on that.
Well, did you sing hup, 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 athletic kinds of songs or some romantic songs or what?
I would think they were more romantic times.
My Wild Irish Rose?
Perhaps.
Did you have an accompanist?
Yes.
Somebody, some boy playing the piano?
No, it wasn't. It was one of the, it'd be one of the teachers. I'm not quite sure.
How often did you practice?
I would make a guess that it was probably about an hour three times a week.
Mm-hmm. Were you getting credit for this, do you think?
Yes.
Okay. What made you want to be in the Glee Club?
I don't remember that too much. I'm sorry. You know, I sat here and I have pretty much a blank.
It looks as though there are maybe 20 boys in that.
The whole high school, yes.
The whole high school?
Freshmen.
You mean boys didn't have a choice about whether they were going to be in the Glee Club? Usually they do, but maybe at that time with a small high school, they said, now, in order to have a decent glee club, you've all got to be in it. I don't care whether you can sing or not.
It's a pretty good turnout, isn't it? I don't know. I think it's kind of like music and art and things like that. It was perhaps a requirement for, an elective, but... either do that or something else. Yes.
Some boys can't carry a tune. You remember that problem?
I have no trouble on that. I had a good boy.
Well, I mean, some other boys have that problem.
Oh, yes,
you remember noticing that when you were saying?
No, not really. Okay. No, it's not as a group. It's, as a matter of fact, when I went to college, I participated in a cappella.
Did you do this all the way through Imbler High School, all 4 years?
No, I think it was 2 years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. In this picture of you that I pulled out again, do you think you were beyond sophomore, maybe junior?
No, that was about the same.
It's about the sophomore year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, there I am again right there.
So did I get the right one?
Where?
This is supposed to be you.
Yeah, right there is me again.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Uh-huh, right.
Uh-huh. Okay. I want to give the credit to somebody else.
I would have done quite good in music, but
number nine, I think I see a Model T or Model A Ford. Which is it?
It's a 490 Chevrolet.
Chevrolet.
1922, yes.
And who's in that picture?
That's my mother and my dad and myself. Yes.
Do you remember the occasion?
It just happened that we were going by my Uncle Willie's home, which is right next to our place, and They happened to have a camera, and they had us stop and took our picture.
Would this have been a Sunday afternoon trip, perhaps?
It would look like it. It would look either we're going to Le Grand, the big town, or we're going to some doings of some sort, like picnic or visiting someplace. You know, back in those days, once or twice a month we'd go and visit somebody else. Or once or twice a month people would come and visit us when we're not right involved with harvesting or haying or something of that nature.
Did you go willingly on trips like this?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't ever want to be left behind.
Would you take a lunch along in this?
No. In a case like this, why? It could, you see, there'd be what's called chautauquas and fairs and reunions. And then there'd be family gatherings like Easter or 4th of July or things like that, you know.
Do you remember going to a Chautauqua any other place than Le Grand?
No, I don't.
They had them at Riverside Park, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, correct. Uh-huh.
And do you remember any one that you did go to?
Vaguely, but I do remember, yes.
Usually there would be several speakers, wouldn't there?
Well, of course, us kids were not interested in that. We were just interested in playing around, you know. And
what was there to do other than chase one another?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I guess, as you try to recall, you try to think what all it was, because you were playing with kids that you never knew before,
yep.
You know, and sort of meeting. I was always very, very bashful as that kid, clear up through college, very bashful. And consequently, just watching other kids, sometimes chasing them, with them chasing you, and they had slides and swings and things like that to take up.
But you don't remember any of the actual programs that the Chautauquas offered?
No, I really don't. No, I never did attend many after I got out of.
Do you remember whether the ones that you went to in Riverside Park were under a tent?
To me, it seems like that there has always been a building there at the Riverside Park, as long as I can remember.
It would have been made a good place.
Yes, sure. Yes. Yes.
Where did you get the gas for that Chevrolet?
Which one? This one?
Mm-hmm.
Elma's uncle's grocery store. In those days, they carried gasoline.
In Somerville?
In Somerville, yes. In above.
One of these old pumps, if you like this.
Now, describe that, would you? I don't know about that.
Well, it's just a pump with a big handle on it. And
you'd move it back and forth?
Back and forth to pump the gas up into the top of the thing so that it'll run out.
Was this self-serve, or was there an attendant doing the pumping?
Oh, sometimes. Your uncle.
Oh, okay. I guess.
But
that's.
But I had a gauge up here on the little tank up above, and it was glass usually.
And you could see the gas
had
in it.
Numbers and the numbers of the gallons.
Could you see the gas in this glass?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But back in this day, back here, that was long before. What Elma's talking about with this car yet, and the old Model T that I told you about that we traveled, grew up into Canada with, at their grocery store, the gasoline was in a probably a 55-gallon drum, and you pumped it out into a 5-gallon can, or at a 1-gallon can, and the gasoline went in under the front seat of the car.
So you'd have to buy 5 gallons minimum and then put in what you needed and carry the rest home?
They'd put in whatever you wanted, you know. Oh. If you wanted 5 gallons, they'd take a 5 gallon can and pour it in if you wanted. Usually it was 5 gallons in amount. There's no such a thing as filler up in those days.
And what do we have here in number 11, number 10?
Number 10, I was living in Le Grand, going to college at that time, and I had gone out, and I was a very fortunate young man. Usually, although I can't remember it otherwise, that the first day I went out, I got my deer. It just happened that way.
And there he is?
And there's one of them. Oh, that's right.
Not the first one.
No. I got many deer before. And I did that every year up until I got shot myself.
What kind of a gun were you using then?
I had what is called an old 30-40 Krag. It was a...
buckshot?
No. No, it was regular. Cartridge. Mm-hmm. It was like 30-06 or mm-hmm. something. 30-40.
Why did you have the deer in that strange position on the car? Was there any other better way to carry it?
Usually, if you got a deer, you like to drive up and down Adams Avenue so people could see you.
Look!
Yeah.
Blood dripping on the ground?
Oh, no. It had all been dressed out.
Oh. Was that just the head then, or not the whole body?
It might be just the head. I don't remember anymore. Very possibly it's just the head, but if I drove up and down ground before I ever... it may be the whole deer. I don't remember.
After you have the deer over the hood of the car for a while and the heat from the car, it isn't too good for the meat.
Do you think you were doing some gloating in this photo?
Well, I just, all my life, I have just loved automobiles. This is an innate passion, and that's why I have an 03 model out here right now, just to be able to think it's an 03. This was the 1933 Chevrolet that belonged to prominent man in town called Roy Barnum Supply. And he traded that in and I'd gotten it, so I not only want to show the deer, but I want to show my car.
Were you still in college when this photo was taken?
Yes, that was uh-huh. college. That was college. Can I correct that?
Yeah.
May you? Please.
It says on the license plate, not 193, and then I can't see the other number.
I don't think.
Sometime in the 1930s, then.
I think this was the fall after. Now this would be my last year of college.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're right.
Uh-huh. What are you wearing there? I guess it's just a regular shirt and pants. I thought it was overalls at first.
Yeah.
Was that your hunting outfit or your display outfit?
I think it was my display outfit.
This, the antlers on this deer, what would you call them?
I think that'd be called a two-point. A two or a three-point.
Mm-hmm. Which means it's about how old?
2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any sentimental feelings about an animal like this?
Not in those days, no. Because
it was prey.
I grew up from a kid, did a lot to do for our winter meat supply.
So, if you were a senior in college, where do you think this deer went after you finished displaying it on Adams Avenue?
My grandfather and grandmother, Dieterer, where I was living at the time, run a boarding and rooming house, and this in boarding, they were feeding 8 to 10, no, more than that, 10 to 12 people a day, plus my mother and dad and I and Grandpa and Grandma Niederer. So we always had good use for any type of food like this. And I used to, after I was working, college, after I started working, I would go over to Huntington after work and sit around there until at a all-night restaurant. And when day began to break, I'd always have somebody who'd be with me. We'd go on over to the break on the Snake River and to hunt ducks. In those days, the limit, I believe, was 24. So, no problem, you get 24 ducks. And also, once in a while, we'd get a goose. Sometimes we would get a Chinese pheasant or two. I'd come home with all of this kill, and of course my mother and my grand folks, my dad was usually out working, would dress all that, and that would, they'd have a real feast on that, rumors and porkers that were living there. Mm-hmm. Of course I enjoyed that. I'd go with very little sleep that particular 24 hours, and my shoulder would usually be black and blue.
From all the recoil, the recoil of that gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
In the 1930s, how would the meat of a deer like this be preserved? I'm assuming you wouldn't eat it all in a few days.
Yes, we would.
You would?
Not that many people, yes.
Canning, probably.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I don't care if deer meat, but I like.
Now you got to remember too that back in 1930s, we still, even in La Grande, we would trade things with somebody else. My grandpa Niederer would maybe trade that with some other party in town. Mm-hmm. That's how we would use up. We'd be a butcher to pig or beef.
Do you remember witnessing any of those bartering sessions to know exactly what was said and how the deal was made?
It was very much just a similar, let's say, the three of us are sitting around here.
Well, I'd come in, I'd confront you somewhere and say, I've got a deer. You want to trade it for a what?
Oh, we'd know. It'd be more like you're a neighbor or a relative. And they would probably know ahead of time that I was hunting this evening and all and everything. So when we were living like in the Grand, we had telephone, you know. And say, hello, Eugene. Sandy got a deer yesterday. What can you use, a hind quarter or a bunch of ribs or something? You know, oh yeah, that'd be great. You know, like St. Tobin, maybe Eugene was out hunting. Give me a call. Yalma's same thing. We tried.
What would the person who said that'd be great give you in return?
Probably when they went hunting, they'd do the same
thing. Oh, you sort of keep a mental note that they owe you something?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah. It's
you didn't keep books on it, huh?
No, it was mental mostly.
Well, that's what I meant. Uh-huh. I don't know what, maybe that's done now. I've never done it.
I wanted to know how you did it. I don't think it does anymore because refrigeration is just pretty well done away with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a grapefruit tree down below, and we bring a lot of grapefruit home in the spring. Well, we give it to the neighbors. This man across the street goes fishing up in Canada with his dad, and we get a nice big of salmon and halibut, and I mean, it's just...
Yeah, we do this.
I guess they just feel
today,
like...
Today, right now. I mean, this spring we did that. Last spring we did here, spring before.
Well, I can imagine how it would happen
and
around here fairly
this
often.
This neighbor right across the street has two beautiful peach trees. Mm-hmm. And we always have peaches. And we get them grapefruits and all.
Well, it didn't happen very often in Seattle.
No, that.
Well...
Alma, would you talk more about this building in, what, let's see.
Somerville.
It would be...
Come over here. This better home? Or is she already?
Yes. It's okay where she is.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the Arnville's
building. Well, that's why I say...
I don't know too much about it.
Well, you were telling me something about it when we were there. Picture number 11 and 12.
Okay.
Just where it was in relation to other buildings that are no longer there, and what kinds of activities went on there.
Okay. Well, this particular building, the first I remember of it, my uncle John Wagner had a store in the bottom part of it. And the Rebecca's and Odd Fellows met upstairs.
And you think it was built around 19... Well, we saw the date
on
it, didn't
we? Yeah, we saw the date
18
on it.
Something.
I can't tell what it is.
I can't read it either without a magnifying glass. Okay, I'll get that later. It's a pretty old building anyway. It's a pretty old building anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And I can remember the Odd Fellows and Rebecca's used to have clam feed. Someone would go, I guess, would go to the coast and get steamer clams, big wash tubs full of them, and they'd cook them upstairs on the stove and have a big clam feed. But Uncle John and Aunt Pearl lived in the back. They fixed an apartment type in the back here of the store, so they could stay there. Then it was I don't know if he built. There was a larger building that he had for a store that was just across the way here a little bit. Okay, on the south side.
Well, before we leave that. The store sold food mainly?
Uh-huh. Meats and vegetables and canned stuff and coffee and candy and popsicles and all that good old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But across the street years ago was a hotel, and it was run by Maud McCrae and his parents.
Maud is a male name?
Uh-huh.
M-A-U-D-E?
Uh-huh. Huh. And I think it was just M-A-U-D. Anyway, then on the down on the end of the block from there was a big livery stable, and where people would put their horses, you know, when they come to town. Across the street, the main street from this building, I never did see it, but there was the walls there of an old bank building. And they had a bank there. On north on the street, they had a brewery. On the same side of the street that this building is on, there was the other side of Uncle John's new grocery store, I'll put it that way, was a building that was a doctor's office. And the doctor was married to my dad's, one of his sisters. He could stand in the front door and look clear through the house to the back. Well, that in time became my grandmother's and later my mother's house, and I lived there for quite a little bit. Then on the other side of that building was another, I'm thinking it was a store where Rosie lived. But it was a store of some kind. And on the other side of that was a harness shop. And then on beyond that was a barber shop. And Lot Elmer was the barber. And that was a good place just to go and pass the time of day and listen to the, when I was a kid, listen to all of the stories that were going on. They were good stories. And I can't remember. Then on the next block were homes. Sandy's folks lived in one of them. And I can't remember too much more about what was there.
The school was part of this group of buildings, wasn't it?
The what?
The school.
No, the school was on more or less to itself. The school building.
How far away from the town center?
probably in blocks, probably about four blocks, four or five.